scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass, in left corner to Aguila. Aguila in a circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, let's get it going. And for the first time in a little while, welcome to the Scotiabank Saddledome. Welcome to this hour of Flames Talk. It's Thursday, December 12th with Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg from the Hot Stove Lounge on this Thursday. Flames Talk this hour underway. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to the Dome, Vicks. How are we doing?
I've missed these walls, Patrick.
Really hasn't been that long, but we're back here to hang out for a five-game homestand that starts on Thursday night against the Tampa Bay Lightning and wraps up with Calgary's final game before Christmas. That game, of course, is next Saturday afternoon when they host the Chicago Blackhawks. And here at the Dome for Thursday's game against Tampa Bay, it's Dan Vladar time once again between the pipes. And I thought that was the obvious decision coming out of Thursday or Tuesday's win in Nashville. I thought that was the call that just seemed to make sense. Like, had you asked me who they would go with or who they should go with, I would have said, yeah, probably go with Vladar. He's coming off the win. He's been the guy who's been slightly better of late. And when you're in a tandem situation, sometimes you go with the guy that has been a little bit better of late. Now, this is Vladar's fifth of six. It's his longest or largest run of the season. Part of that is because Wolf missed a start last week while he was sick. He was supposed to start Tuesday's game against Columbus, but didn't due to being sick. Then Vladar got the shutout, so it was the easy choice to go right back in the next game. But Vicks, Vladar is the guy going right now, and this is a tandem. It was always going to happen or work both ways. It wasn't that long ago that Wolf started 6 of 8 games.
Right.
When he was going a little better than Vladar was. Like, there's no favoritism going on here. They've both gotten chances. They're both going to continue to get chances. They're both going to have plenty of opportunity to work their way back into kind of the 1A slot. But that's a tandem. Wolf's fighting it a little bit right now. Vladar's rolling. He's been steady. Other than people just wanting Wolf to play because he's the guy they want to see, or you know, he's their they like him better, or they're more enamored by the fact that he's the younger goaltender. I mean, I don't quite get the pushback on why they would go Vladar in this game. I thought it was pretty obvious to go go Dan Vladar with the way he's been playing and knowing the Flames are. Here's the thing. Ryan Huska's making decisions not for 2 years down the road. He's making decisions for right now. If I were to ask you today, December 12th, what goalie are you feeling more confident right now, who would you say?
I would say Vladar.
As would I, and that's why I would go to him. And that doesn't mean that'll be different in 3 or 4 days' time, right?
Right, and like, let's be clear, this is a tandem. The Calgary Flames do not have a number one and a number two goalie. They have a platoon situation where we're beyond the start of the season where you alternate starts unless one guy gets a shutout and then he gets to double up and run with it as long as he can keep the opponent off the board. But we're in the situation now where if one goalie is skewing more positively than the other, then yeah, by all means, you can give him a run of 4 or 5 in 6 or 7 games. And as you mentioned, we saw Dustin Wolf carry that sort of similar workload earlier.
As he should have
during that stretch. And now the fact remains that when you ask the question, which goaltender on Thursday, December 12th, gives you more confidence that you can beat the Tampa Bay Lightning? Well, the answer is Vladar. And I mean, part of that is Vladar's play, and part of that, to be perfectly honest, from my perspective, is Wolf's play. And I could understand some social media pushback or the text line at 960 going, hey, where's my Dustin Wolf? But Wolf has lost three straight. He's given up 14 goals in that span. 4 goals, 4 goals, 6 goals in that stretch.
Yeah, he's below 900 in each of his last three starts, which happens.
And then you've got Dan Vladar, who has points in three straight. He's 2-0-1 in his past three starts. And I'm not necessarily going to be like, oh, look at Dan Vladar. He's got a 950 save percentage in that stretch. He doesn't. But he's certainly been better than Wolf in that stretch of time. So when the Flames roll into the Saddle Dome on Thursday morning and you see Vladar in the starter's net, I didn't bat an eye. And to be perfectly honest, I don't even know. I feel like we did, like, for, I can't remember if it was 30 seconds or 2 minutes, but touch on, okay, who would you start?
I think we did. Yeah.
Well, it's Vladar, and I didn't really give any second thought of it. So, yeah, you do see kind of this, well, where's Dustin Wolf pushback? It's like, well, give him some time to work on his own game, get his house in order in terms of, you know, the last 2 weeks haven't been super flattering for him. So let him get back to Calgary, let him work on some things with the goaltending staff, and get him back humming the way he was earlier this season.
When it's all said and done, we're probably going to see these guys pretty close to an even split.
41-41, wouldn't shock me.
If they don't end up making a move with Vladar or another one of their goalies, if they play 82 with these two guys this year, you're almost certainly going to see a pretty close to split right down the middle. Like, will it be 41-41? Maybe not, but will it be like 43-39? Yeah, you could absolutely see something like that one way or the other. And so I guess I was just a little taken aback by the aggressive pushback. Like, what are they doing? How can they do this? What are they thinking? Right now, Vladar has been the slightly steadier guy. He has won games, and he has looked a little less vulnerable over the last little bit. This is not much like it was. Remember 2 weeks ago when we were saying, friends, Dustin Wolf hasn't won the number one job because there isn't a number one job right now. He's just the guy going a little bit better. Well, In his first full NHL season, to just expect it to be a flat line, there's going to be some ups and downs. And so I think what we're seeing right now is some of those ups and downs. And so the last three starts haven't been as good. Vladar has picked up some wins. He's gotten his record back above 500. I think he's been steady all year long in terms of, has he been spectacular? No, but he's been steady and given the team a steady opportunity to win on most nights. I guess my point is that I was a little taken aback by the aggressive pushback on social media. And also, and I'm not saying that you're wrong, by the way. Like, I'm not saying that you're not entitled to your opinion. Of course you are. I was just a little surprised by how much of it was out there on Thursday morning. The other thing is, the one thing that I personally don't agree with is the idea that by starting Vladar more here over the last couple of weeks, you're ruining Dustin Wolf's confidence. I don't buy that even the slightest bit. Dustin Wolf is maybe the most mentally impervious human being I've ever been around at the NHL level. Like, things do not rattle him, or if they do rattle him, he does not let that be shown with his play on the ice or his demeanor or his practice habits or anything like that. So I don't think Dustin Wolf struggles with confidence. I don't think that starting a stretch of games for the other guy is going to mess with his confidence. And then the last point I'd make is, like, they're still teammates, and they're still guys that are rooting for one another and trying to elevate one another. And when you're a part of a tandem as a rookie in the NHL, if the other guy getting some starts when he deserves them is going to rattle your confidence, that's a little bit of a slight bit of an issue.
That's a red flag.
And that's not what we're talking about here with Dustin. It's going to take 10, 30, 100 times more to rattle that guy's confidence and belief in himself. He does it like, he is supremely confident in himself in the least cocky way I've maybe ever seen. There's just not a whole lot of lack of belief or lack of understanding of, you know, what he needs to do and the belief that he can get back to doing those things. He'll get back in. They've got a 5-game homestand. He's going to play multiple games on this homestand, but Vladar is the guy who I think deserves to start this game.
Well, and I get it, too, from the sense that you've got your prized prospect rookie goaltender. He'll only have made 3 starts in the span of 20-ish days. That's a start a week, roughly. That's not ideal. That's not what you want to see from a fan perspective when you want an influx of youth into your lineup. You want to see Dustin Wolf. I say this respectfully, there's more Dustin Wolf jerseys in the crowd tonight than there are Dan Vladar jerseys in the crowd tonight. But to think that this stretch would somehow in some way impact Wolf's confidence, if 3 bad starts are only getting 3 starts in a span of 3 weeks, is going to affect Wolf mentally, he already wouldn't be here and you already wouldn't be at this level. Like, you can't be a goalie and get sour over a 3-week stretch of
Very
time
true.
Where things aren't going your way and expect to find success later on in your career. It just doesn't work that way. So, yeah, he's seen the ebbs and flows of how the schedule is going to unfold, whether it's rotating, whether it's one guy getting a shutout and getting to continue, or these stretches where we've seen 5 and 6 happen from both sides now.
Text line's open, by the way, at 960-960. Always open for you here on Flames Talk, on Sportsnet 960, The Fan, wherever you get your podcasts. And dare I also say, if you are adamant of or adamant about how much of a trade chip the Flames have in Dan Vladar, well, playing him and putting him in spots to succeed and having him succeed, that all only helps his trade value and what you can get back from him if you are going to move him. Like, if that's the way the Flames do decide to go between now and the deadline, well, there's nothing wrong with him playing games. There's nothing wrong with him building up his value. And I give Vladar a lot of credit, because there is a stretch there where, you know, a lot of people thought he had been relegated to being the number two guy. Not perhaps anybody on this program, but there was a lot of talk about, has Wolf grabbed this? Is this his net for the rest of the season? And I remember having conversations with Wilsey on the round table or Mick on post game about, no, this is a tandem. Part of the reason why the Flames are having success between the pipes is because they're a tandem, is because both guys are getting significant minutes. Right now, Dan's are more significant, but it's not. I can guarantee you that this is not going to be the norm going forward. At some point, Wolf's going to wrestle it back, and he's going to go for 4 of 5 or 6 of 7 or 7 of 9 or whatever the case may be. That's the nature of the way they're rolling with their goaltenders this year.
Yeah, no disagreement from me there on that front, because, yeah, just to echo again, we've seen one goalie in Wolf go on the run earlier this season. We've seen Vladar do it now. Just with the natural ebbs and flows of getting hot and getting cold between your two goaltenders, who, again, there is no starting goaltender for the Calgary Flames, or pardon me, no number one goaltender for the Calgary Flames. You're going to ride the goaltender, which you believe is going to give you the better chance to win on any given night. And we're beyond the experiment of rotating starts. We're in the situation now where it's, all right, if we think you're going to give us the better starts and it's going to result in a run, that's 5 of 6 or 7 of 8, then that person's going to get it.
This from Johnny in Millrise, who says, are the Flames guilty of overplaying Wolf? Is that why you see the numbers come down? No, I don't think so. I don't think that it's a fatigue thing or an overwork thing. I just think for a guy who is in his rookie NHL season, who has never played NHL minutes to the same extent that Dustin is this year, there's going to be some ebbs and flows. There's ebbs and flows with the established high-end guys in this league. So a 23-year-old rookie playing in the NHL for the first time, he's going to have some dips. There's going to be a stretch where, yeah, he has 3 or 4 or 6 or 7 rough nights in a row. And I think the confidence level externally, and I know the confidence level internally on Wolf bouncing back, is very high. That's why they're going to go back to him. That's why he's going to remain one of the two equal parts of a tandem. So I personally, I get the question. I think it's a fair question from Johnny. I don't know if it's an overwork thing. I just think it's a kind of learning curve adjustment to the NHL thing.
Yeah, we're not talking about a situation where he's a number one and he's a rookie and he's learning all these same things and he's getting burned out. He's only playing ballpark 47% of the time this season. And in over the course of the past couple years since he's turned pro, including playoffs, he's roughly played 60 games a year. So as it stands right now, he's on pace to play right around that 38-39 mark. So this isn't necessarily, for me, a symptom of fatigue, whether that be physical, whether that be mental. I don't believe either of the case. I just think it's the natural. Sometimes you're hot, sometimes you're not, which you'll experience over an 8-month stretch.
And then this text comes in from Brent in Langdon, who says, not playing Wolf is a marketing plan. They need to pump up Vladar before the trade deadline to get the most value for him. Business decisions are being made here. And again, I don't know if that – I don't think – first of all, I'm quite confident in saying this. I know this for a fact, that Craig Conroy is not going into Ryan Huska's office saying, hey, let's give Vladdy a run here. We need to pump up his trade value. I know that. But I also know that Ryan Huska ain't making decisions based on those things either. Like, I think that there is a byproduct of Vladar playing more that could help if they want to jack up the trade value a little bit, or if trading him is the way they're going to go. But I can tell you that Ryan Huska is not looking at anything further than putting together his roster to beat the Tampa Bay Lightning Thursday night. Like, he's not saying to himself, what's going to be better come February for a trade value? And I'm not suggesting, I'm not suggesting that those thoughts aren't fair on the outside. I can just, speaking to Ryan Huska enough, or any coach, but speaking to Ryan Huska over the last 2 years enough about, you know, plans and what's going to happen. All he cares about is setting his best lineup for Tampa Bay. And if he believes, and Jason LaBarbera believes, that Dan Vladar starting is part of that best lineup, then that's the decision they're going to make, regardless of contract status or age or trade deadline stuff. That stuff, I guarantee, doesn't enter his thought process.
Yeah, and if we're in a situation where we're looking at Dustin Wolf and he only has 3 starts in the span of 3 weeks, but he's allowed 1 goal in 1, 2 in another, and shut out the third, and he's still not seeing that amount of crease time, then I'd start to buy into the fact more that they want to get Dan Vladar some reps so that he gets fully back again. He's still only 15 games removed from having hip surgery that ended his season last year. So I could understand that scenario. But the fact that you've got one goalie that I think has earned you points in 5 of the past 6 games versus one, again, that's allowed 14 goals over the past 3, to me, it's sort of cut and dry as to which way you're going to head for at least the near term. Then you worry about the long-term picture a bit later.
Honestly, I don't think that they have a decision made beyond this game against Tampa. I don't think they have I don't think they are anywhere close to deciding what they're going to do for the game against Florida until they see what happens against Tampa Bay. If Vladar goes out and is lights out and he's a massive reason why they beat the Lightning, then, yep, he goes back in against Florida. But if that doesn't happen, win or loss, I think there's a good chance that Dustin gets the start against the Panthers. So I don't think right now they are, even when it comes to goaltending. You and I were talking about this in the media lounge, or was it Pike? I think it was Pike. You were beside me, and Pike was talking about it to me. And so
I was in the vicinity of.
You were right beside us, and Pike was saying, yeah, they probably, like, do you think they had a plan for the first month or 6 weeks and then go game to game? And honestly, that's what I think it is. I think they have their plan for the first month or so of the season, and it's been all about rolling through since then.
Yeah, and to your point, they've got 5 games coming up in the span of the next 9 days or so. None of these starts outside of Thursday against Tampa Bay, from my perspective, are determined. And that's, again, that's how you're going to roll with your platoon, or that's how you're going to roll with your tandem, where, all right, Dan, we gave you the bulk of the starts you got us to hear, but we didn't necessarily see the things we needed to see against Tampa. Again, hypothetically, we're going to go to the other guy, and we're going to start this process over again.
This from Adam in Saskatoon. You've got to ride the hot goalie. Not saying Wolf isn't hot, but right now Vladar has earned it. And then this one says, gents, where does the organization stand with Devin Cooley? Right now, they don't like him. They think he's got a bad attitude.
How dare you?
He's too involved in the community. They're very high on Devin Cooley. They're big fans, as they should be. He sits second in the American League with a .942 save percentage, second only to Askarov of the San Jose organization. So yeah, they're big fans of Devin Cooley, and they are big fans of how he and Mackenzie Skapski, the Wranglers goaltending coach, have worked together and how much he's improved technically. Like, I could go and watch and I'd have no clue, but you talk to Skapski when he joined us on Flames Talk a few weeks ago, you talk to Sigalet, the director of goaltending, Jordan Sigalet, like, the amount that Devin Cooley has improved in like 2 months, as 3 months with the Flames organization and working with a very highly thought of goaltending coach like Skapski, they are even more elated about their signing. They were really excited about the signing when they made it on July 1st, and even more so now that he has just been lights out at the American League level. So there's no rush to bring him into the NHL right now. There's no rush to take him away from the number one team in the American League, where he's probably en route if you were to go goaltender of the year right now, with no knock on Askarov, but Cooley's right there and has played six more games than he has, I think that Cooley's probably your AHL goalie of the year front runner in the early stages this year. So there's no rush to get him away from there, but he clearly factors into what they're doing in the long term.
Well, and the AHL schedule affords Cooley and Skapski to work together more intensely to fill and work on those technical, perhaps, deficiencies that they've identified in his game since signing him and prior to signing him, so that when he does have his NHL arrival date, all those kinks, if you will, have been ironed out.
Steinberg and Vickers on Flames Talk. This text comes in at a perfect time because the on topic for what we're going to transition to next. Anyway, this text comes in, says, Pat, completely random question regarding Jacob Pelche and Walker Duehr. I understand the reassignment to the American League to stop their waiver clock, but is that just a term, reassignment? Meaning, did they leave Nashville and go to the Wranglers, or would they have just stayed in practice with the NHL team? So what happened was, because they played the game in Nashville, they would fly back with the Flames on Tuesday night. They hopped on the plane right after the win in Nashville and came back and landed early on Wednesday morning. And so the assignment kicked in, or the reassignment kicked in, on Wednesday. Well, they were already in Calgary. The Wranglers played on Wednesday. They didn't play in that game. So essentially, there was no practice Wednesday. There were no team activities. It was a full day off. So Pelche and Duehr just did nothing. They just did have their
they
day
were
like
healthy
normal.
Scratched.
They were healthy scratched for a day off, and you know their paycheck took a little bit of a hit. You know, there'll be a few, shekels that come off the paycheck in a couple of weeks. That's literally it. They came back with the Flames. They were coming back with the Flames anyway, and then they didn't participate in anything because there was nothing to participate in on Wednesday. Then the recall kicked in for Thursday. They were on the ice for morning skate here at the Dome.
And just to be clear, this isn't the Flames being cheap and trying to save a couple grand by demoting a couple players. It has a lot more to do with their waiver status. You get 10 games or 30 days. Of course, Duehr and Pelche cleared waivers coming out of training camp, so every day that they accrue with the Flames brings them one day closer to needing to clear waivers again.
Which leads us to the second part of our conversation before we hit the roundtable with Wilsey. Jacob Pelche looks like he won't play against Tampa Bay. Funny enough, the team he made his NHL debut against.
Fun fact.
A certain someone forgot his number. He likely will sit out Thursday versus Tampa Bay. Ryan Lomberg is back. Congratulations to the Lomberg family. They have welcomed their third child. A daughter, was it early on Thursday morning? Like 3:30
a.m., I believe, is the official time.
So congrats to the Lombergs. That's why Ryan didn't play on any of the two games in the road. He was back here with his wife, Marissa, as she was expecting. And they did welcome a third child, a daughter, on early Thursday morning. Lomberg was buzzing with energy as he was back out there for morning skate Thursday morning. Flames aren't confirming whether he's in, but our powers of deduction, with Jacob Pelche being the lone forward being bag skated after practice and Lomberg being off well early, like one of the third or fourth forwards off the ice at morning skate. If everything goes according to plan and you know there's no, and knock on wood, there is nothing that would keep him from the game, Lomberg returns, and so Jacob Pelche would be the odd man out. And so I understand being a little more frustrated on that front than maybe I was a little more taken aback on the goaltending stuff on social media. But when I posted the projected lineup, I kind of understood the, wait a second, Pelche's played well. He's had four good games. Why is he getting sat? He's not getting sat for punishment reasons. He's not getting sat because he's playing poorly. It's not a performance thing, but somebody has got to come out for Lomberg. Spare me the Kevin Rooney conversation. I know there's a lot of people who are like, why is Rooney still in? Well, he's still in because he plays center. Duehr's not a natural center. Lomberg's not a natural center. Pelche's not a natural center. Kevin Rooney is a center, and for a team that is starved for depth down the middle, and by the way, Rooney had himself a really good game against Nashville as well, so performance-wise, he doesn't even deserve to be out, but Kevin Rooney is the number four center on this team. Kirkland is done for the season. Schwint is in Vegas. You know, Cairns is better suited being, in my opinion anyway, the number one center on the Wranglers. Sam Morton probably isn't ready to be in the NHL. Kevin Rooney is the best and only option right now to be this team's number four center. He is over the boards first with Michael Backlund on a penalty kill that's been a little bit better of late. Like, Rooney's not coming out of the lineup here. So when you've had a when you've got a bunch of rotating wingers, you got to get Lomberg back in. His spot is the left side on that fourth line with Rooney. Yeah, Lomberg's going to come back in. He's an everyday guy on this team.
Right.
So you had to make a decision. Now, I understand the frustration. I guess what I would say when Ryan Huska was in here talking with the broadcast crews on Thursday morning, I think that a lot of the decisions as to who that odd man out is going to be will be made kind of based on the matchup. And so maybe it's different against a Panthers team that plays a little bit differently than the Lightning do. Maybe that's an opportunity for Pelche to come back in, and maybe it's Kuzmenko who comes out of the lineup. Like, you've got different options, and if you wanted to put Pelche on a line with Zary and Coleman, you could do that to take Kuzmenko out. Or if you wanted to take Dewar out, you could put Pelche on the right side. He's played some right side time already this year. So I get the frustration, but I would maybe my advice would be, which you don't have to take, but maybe table it. If he sits out a second game, then I'd be a little bit more on the frustrated side too. I get it for one game with Lomberg coming back in. And Kuzmenko played pretty well against Nashville. You're trying to rehab his game a little bit here too.
Well, for me, we can separate Lomberg from this conversation.
Because for sure.
As you mentioned, he's an everydayer in this lineup. Nobody up front brings what he does. And, you know, you can point to his goals and assists. So what Lomberg brings to the Flames isn't measured in goals and assists. So I would just remove his name entirely from this. To me, this is you have two roster spots for three players right now, and those three players are Pelche, Kuzmenko, and Dewar. And looking back and trying to read between the lines a little bit, Pelche only played just a bit north of 6 minutes against Nashville. He played 6:34, and all of a sudden you've got Lomberg coming back, so now you've got to find somebody to come out. And so that becomes between Dewar, Kuzmenko, and Pelche. And I've quite liked Walker Dewar and what we've seen, maybe a little bit more than Jacob Pelche, but he also gives you that natural right shot. And we know the Calgary Flames don't have a plethora of right shot forwards in their lineup. Kuzmenko, for me, suits the top nine better for what you're trying to execute from a depth standpoint for the Flames. And he is one of their most electrifying players. He's one of their most high skill players. Again, he is one of their most frustrating players as well, but in trying to orchestrate your top three lines, I can see the fit, or at least trying to come back to Kuzmenko and have him work himself out of the funk that he's in. Again, Kuzmenko, no shots on goal against Nashville, but I understand the thought process. But it's not like you're using pen or, you know, non-erasable ink to put Kuzmenko into this lineup for the remainder of the season. For me, this rotation, as it stands, December 12th, is a three-player race between Pelche, Dewar, Kuzmenko for the two spots that are available.
Honestly, I've liked Pelche in the four games he's played, albeit
a lot of energy, a lot of speed.
In a limited role. He's done in a fourth-line role. He's done, I think, all you could ask. He's been more productive than really we've ever seen him at the NHL level, so that's a plus.
2 points in four games, yeah.
The energy has been good. The defensive play, I think, has been strong. The battles have been really strong. He's won a lot of battles on the board, so I've liked that. He's shown a little bit of offensive flair. So, you know, I've liked Pelche in his four games. And, you know, here's the reason that I would, I guess, just provide a little optimism that I don't think this is just going to turn into a situation where Pelche is perpetually scratched, because, you know, Ryan Huska was raving about Pelche and Dewar's work on the penalty kill. With Lomberg coming back in as a left-shot guy, for now, Pelche was probably the guy to sit out for a game, but I would even imagine the message would be, hey, this isn't permanent. We've got some roster decisions to make or lineup decisions to make on each and every night. Let's see how Dewar does tonight. Let's see how Kuzmenko does tonight, and then it could go from there. So if it turns into two or three games where Pelche's sitting, then I'd be a little bit more frustrated. I understand it for one game, though.
For me, two doesn't get me nervous. It's that when you get into that third game. So even sitting two wouldn't have alarm bells ringing in my head about what are they doing with Jacob Pelche, and if they're not using him here, why isn't he back down with the Wranglers? For me, it's getting into that third game that would be critical, but I'm sure the message, as you just relayed, is, hey, Jacob, be ready. We're not scratching you out of the lineup because we're upset at something you've done or something that you haven't done. It's just this is the product of what we're building in terms of competitiveness amongst our forward group.
A couple of things. First of all, this was very awesome news to hear a little earlier on Thursday. Obviously, every summer, late summer, the Rogers Charity Classic out at Canyon Meadows has turned into an absolute tradition in this city. And the 2024 Rogers Charity Classic set a brand new fundraising record for the event. So, since the tournament's inception, the Rogers, first the Shaw, and now the Rogers Charity Classic has raised over $137 million for Southern Alberta Charities. $137,700,000 is how much has been raised since inception. This year surpassed last year's fundraising by more than $6 million. The Rogers Charity Classic has announced a $1 million donation to Rogers Charity for Kids, and Rogers remains committed on a five-year deal as title sponsor of the Rogers Charity Classic, Canada's only PGA Tour Champions Tournament. Details on the 2025 event are coming soon, but congratulations to Chris Dornan and everybody else involved with the Rogers Charity Classic. More than $137 million raised since inception, and more than $6 million more this year than last year. That is awesome to see. We're coming at you from the Hot Stove Lounge here at the Scotiabank Saddledome. Our producers this hour are Cam and Shan. They're back at the Groundworks Downtown Studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now for our Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. It's Steinberg. Aaron Vickers along with you here at the Hot Stove Lounge at the Scotiabank Saddledome. And now Derek Wills, voice of the Flames, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable here on this Thursday. Flames getting set to host the Tampa Bay Lightning Thursday night, and they get set to kick off a five-game homestand. Gents, we know how big a deal it was Tuesday when the Flames finally won a game on the road. Their first road win since early November, their first regulation road win since October. And now they start off five in a row at home. They won't play on the road until December 28th. What are the big differences now that they're back home, now that the road losing streak doesn't exist for the time being? What are the big differences we've noticed between the Flames playing here at the Dome as opposed to playing in other buildings?
Well, generally speaking, and this doesn't apply as much to the last couple of games they played on the road, because I thought they were good in the first two periods against the Stars in that 6-2 loss on Sunday, and you know, pretty good from start to finish in that 4-3 win over the Predators on Tuesday. But when I think about all the road games they've played this season, for me, they've lacked energy in a lot of them. And they've had a lot of energy here at Scotiabank Saddledome, where they've been way better than on the road, 10-3-1. They've got a seven-game point streak on home ice. And I really do think that fans are excited about this team. And I think the team has fed off the energy from the fans inside of this building. And kind of building on that, I think that the Flames have been a tougher team to play against at home than on the road, and that might have something to do with the energy, because I think they've skated better, I think they've been more physical on home ice, and that's really the way they're built. That's the brand of hockey they want to play, that's the identity that they want to have, and I just think they've done a better job playing to that identity at home than on the road.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree when you look at the home and road splits to start with. There are a couple elements that I kind of identify, and one of them is special teams. And you look at the splits of what the power play and penalty kill does at home versus on the road. At home, they've got the 23.9% success rate on the power play versus just 18.4% on the road. So that's 12th in the NHL versus 24th in the NHL. That's a significant split. On the penalty kill, they're successful 78.4% of the time at home. Still not great. That's only 19th in the league, but on the road, they're 32nd at 69.2%. So we're talking about 15% combined special team success found more at home than on the road. So that's a key one. And that trickles down into some of the other things, whether they're goals per game at home at 2.86 versus on the road 2.33. That's almost half a goal a game more scored at home. On the road, they're giving up a lot more as well. 3.67 goals per game on the road. That's 27th in the NHL versus 2.23 at home. That's fourth best. So we're talking about dramatic swings here. And a lot of it, you can also see the trickle-down effect into time playing with the lead, which is, we all know, it's a lot easier to play with the lead than it is to try to be chasing the game all the time. And prior to that game against Nashville, as we discussed on Flames Talk previously, Pat, prior to that game, 50 minutes of a total of 855 spent behind. Or sorry, pardon me, with the lead.
Yeah.
At home, in the 857 minutes of action they've played with the lead 234 minutes, five times as often there with the lead. So you just kind of look into some of the advanced metrics or some of the stats of how special teams are going, how you're producing, where you're producing from. Like, it just slants so significantly more to finding home success.
Well, there's a few things. I mean, first of all, the playing with the lead stat was just mind-blowing coming out of was mind-blowing going into the Nashville game. So after the Dallas game, where they did have a lead, but they held it for all of 3.5 minutes, coming out of the Dallas game, they were 32nd in the NHL of 32 in terms of time played with the lead. They'd played just over 6% of their time on the road was spent playing in front.
Incredible.
They actually added about 24 minutes to that, or whatever it was, on Tuesday in Nashville, which moved them from 32nd to 31st. Now Montreal is last in that category, so they actually made a move in that regard. But Wilsey, it's been so hard for them to get leads on the road, to score first on the road, and there have been so many occasions where even when they've had the lead, the road team comes back and scores pretty quickly, like we saw Tuesday in Dallas. So that would be number one. But the biggest thing that I've seen in terms of differences on the road as opposed to home is the Flames are, if you quickly do some reverse math, which I'm not very good at, the Flames are 28th overall when it comes to team save percentage on the road at .873. This is a team that has been a top 10 goaltending team overall in the league, and yet they're 28th overall with their team save percentage at home. Like that to me is maybe the most telling thing. The goaltending has been outstanding here at the Scotiabank Saddledome. They're the number 3 home goaltending team at .926. They're the number 28 road goaltending team. So, and that's not putting it all on the goalies, but Wolf and Vladar have given them significantly better work here than on the road. On top of that, the team has not been able to get or hold leads, and the special teams have probably been a whole lot more impactful here at the Dome as well.
Yeah, and I would say more Wolf than Vladar. I think Vladar has been a little more consistent home versus away, where you look at Wolf splits, 7-1-0, 185, 942 at home, 1-4-1, 4-16, 8-62 on the road.
That's a split.
That's not great. That's why I thought he might
start
tonight.
One more time?
Okay, so 7-1-0, 185, 942 in 8 games at home, 1-4-1, 4-16, 8-62 in 6 games on the road.
Whew, that's a bit of a split.
Now, he's 23. It's his first full season in the league. He is playing in buildings and against teams for the first time. So, hey, I'll cut Dustin Wolf some slack. And as you pointed out, Pat, it's not all on the goaltenders. For me, I still come back to a lack of energy. And part of that might be because the travel's tough and they've been worn out and worn down at times. And I asked Ryan Huska about this, and I've asked some other Flames coaches about it. I asked Pete DeBoer about it prior to that game against a very good home team in the Stars on Sunday, because their home and away splits as a team are very different as well. And he basically said the same things that Flames coaches have said to me, is that the margin between winning and losing in this league is really slim. So sometimes the advantages that you get being the home team, whether that be the crowd or having last change, that's enough to swing a game one way or the other. So the Flames finally got a win on the road, which should build their confidence a little bit. But they've got lots of confidence here at home. A couple of tough games to start this five-game homestand, though, against the Lightning won two Stanley Cups in the 2020s, and the Panthers, who won the last one. So we'll see if they can stay on this heater at home.
It is our Daily Flames Roundtable with Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg on this Thursday. You know, all year we've been raving about the pairing of Rasmus Anderson and Kevin Ball. However, a combined minus 14 on that road trip. They were each combined minus 7 in Dallas and in Nashville. A big reason why the Preds were able to take those 3-1 goal leads. A couple of them were some, you know, a couple of rough reads by that pairing. But I think I know the answer. How concerned by that are we? What level of concern does that raise for you guys?
I'm not overly concerned. It's a pretty small sample size, and I think that you know, you throw the last couple of games out, and that's been a fantastic first pairing for the Flames this season with Kevin Ball on the left and Rasmus Anderson on the right. And I think they'll get back to being the guys they've been for most of the season, and it'll be tough tonight, tough on Saturday. You got the Lightning and the Panthers in town, but you know they're going to do a lot of heavy lifting, and I think one of the reasons why they struggled in those two games on the road is you're playing against a really good Stars team, you're playing against a really desperate Predators team that has one good line. They don't have two or three or four good lines in Nashville. They have one, and they've got plenty of good players in Dallas. And who do you want on the ice against the other team's top line? You want that pairing of Ball and Anderson. So they've had some tough matchups against some really good players. And Megan Mickelson asked Ryan Huska about it this morning, and basically the Flames head coach, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said, you know, they've been on time in most games this season. They were just a second late on a handful of occasions during that two-game road trip. So I'm sure they've watched some film. I'm sure they've talked about it. I'm sure Ball and Anderson will be back to being a good pairing as they've been for the vast majority of the season, returning home for five.
Yeah, I feel like we talked a lot about ebbs and flows with the goaltending, and the same is true for players, whether you're a forward or a defenseman. And I feel like we're just in one of those sort of sequences where things start to get away from you a little bit with Rasmus Anderson and Kevin Ball. And keep in mind, too, we're talking about two of the three most used defensemen, both in terms of just overall ice time, in terms of even strength ice time. Like, Ball only plays at even strength. Ball only plays six fewer seconds than Mackenzie Weegar. So when you're out there and you're eating the minutes that Rasmus Anderson and Kevin Ball are, you're going to go through stretches where you get it handed to you. It happens to the best players in the NHL, regardless of circumstance. There'll be a stretch where, say, you're scoring forward and you go four without, you know, even getting in a secondary assist, for example. Stretches happen. Anderson and Ball are in one right now, but my concern level doesn't necessarily start to send flares up until we see a more extended stretch where it's like, oh my goodness, what is going on? Is it time to separate them? Is it time to try something different? For me, I'm not at that concern level.
No, I would say I have next to zero, if not any, concern at all. You play as much as those guys do. They're going to have a rough night or two. I mean, you play, this is the number two most used tandem on defense in the NHL at 5-on-5. The only one that has spent more time together, and it's only by about 9 minutes, has been Ekholm-Bouchard in Edmonton. Otherwise, Anderson Ball, number two in the league in terms of how much time they've spent together. And when you spend that much time, Willsy, to your point, when you're used as the number one pairing, and when you're used as the pairing against the top players on the other side, yeah, you're going to have an off night. I mean, you're playing 82 games. And, you know, I think that I don't know if it any more is hampering them, but there was something that was bugging Rasmus for a little bit there. And we always know when you're playing the minutes these guys are playing, especially Rasmus, who's, I think, top 10 in the NHL in average time on ice, you're going to be banged up a lot of the time as well. But fact is, over an 82-game season, you're going to have, I don't know, 10 or 15 nights where you're just not as good as you'd like to be. And sometimes you're going to get rolled up for a dash four or a dash three. And that's what we saw from Raz against Dallas. Or maybe it was against Nashville that he was minus four. One of the last two games he was minus four. But that happens. And they've been so good together that if you're a coach, if you're a fan, if you're us on the outside, you just kind of shrug your shoulders and say, yeah, they'll be fine. Like, you know what? Hedman's had bad nights, and Makar and Taves have had bad nights, and Petrangelo's had bad nights, and Haskinen's had bad nights. Like, it happens to everybody, and the last two games just been a rough stretch for Ball and Anderson.
And I would actually argue that it wasn't two bad games for that top pairing. It was one bad period. Right, because it was 2-2 through 2 in Dallas.
Third period in Dallas.
And they were also first period in a bit against Nashville. They struggled.
Yeah, that game got away from them against the Stars. And Rasmus's was a career worst minus 4.
So it was minus 4 against Dallas?
And Ball was a career worst minus 5. So those are outliers, those two games
for sure
for them. But didn't love them early in that game against the Predators, but I certainly like them more and more as that game went on. And the other thing, too, is you fall behind in the third period and do it in, what, a 7 or 8 minute span. That game really got away from the Flames. And then you have to lean a little bit heavier on your top players to try to bridge that gap and come back in the hockey game. And, again, one bad thing led to another for the Flames in the third period on Sunday night. So I'm not worried about those two guys. They're going to be just fine.
Yep. Well, and to your question or query, Pat, Rasmus Anderson is 12th in the NHL, averaging 24.43 of ice time per game. 10th is Brock Faber. Anderson's 5 seconds per game behind. So frustrating, yeah, probably, especially for those two individuals. Concerning, not yet.
Yeah.
And Rasmus also leads the league in shifts per game, 32.2. He plays a lot.
He's hopping them boards frequently.
Yeah, he sure is.
Where is he at on the block shots counter?
Block shots, he is second.
Oh, what a...
Chris Tanev has jumped ahead of him with 86. And then you've got Mackenzie Weegar, who's fourth. So the Flames doing what it takes to win?
No, no. Neither of them are number one. Like, come on.
Well, that's only when it counts?
Might change tonight.
Yeah, that's a good point. So we will see how it all plays itself out tonight on Thursday for that pairing of Anderson and Ball. I think we all think they'll be back to normal here pretty quickly. Try that again. Darren Vickers, Eric Wills.
I don't know if I like that.
No.
Rat Steiger.
Off the top rope. The number one rat. Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg. That's your Daily Flames Roundtable. That'll start to wrap us up this hour on the program as well. Thanks to Cam Hughes, Shan Virgie, our outstanding producers. And that'll wrap us up on our Daily Flames Roundtable. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.